This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Okay, well, good morning and welcome to this astronomical adventure. Is Orion's Belt a waste of space? No. Why? Because God made it. God put it there. Why? What good does it do us in our busy world? We run around with our phones and our people and our activities and barely notice, pay attention to the skies and what's happening up there, right? So, Orion's Belt might as well be a waste of space. But that star-studded belt is there for a reason. We want to look at that, Orion and the heavens, during this adventure in astronomy. And the main reason for that is to appreciate what's there and become familiar with it, and hopefully point others to observe and appreciate and be aware of the heavens. Speaking of running, I have two sons who are ultra runners. They love to run. And that ultra running is, a marathon is 26.2 miles. And they think that's too short to run. They like to run ultra races. So here's my son coming in after a 34-mile race. It was a 50K race. And he's beaming. And they were going to run a 64-mile race up and down the mountains the other year. The first time they ran a 60-mile race, 100K. And I told him, you're crazy. You guys are crazy. Like, Dad, we can do it. It'll be fun. And so we're in there. About every 8-10 miles, there's an aid station. And I'm tearing from aid station to aid station because they're coming in first, right? And they're coming in, you know, after 30 miles, beaming, just loving it, thoroughly enjoying this race. And at the end of 64 miles, and they come in 2 hours ahead of everybody else, you know, just beaming. They love to run because they can. And David, the psalmist, knew some ultra runners. Didn't think about this when I hooked my phone up, but let me pull the verse up. So listen to this. In them he has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom leaving his chamber, and like a strong man runs his race with joy. David knew some ultra runners, like my sons, and he knew something else. He knew the heavens. He knew them enough to compare the sun to the ultra runners he knew. And he says more in the beginning of Psalm 19, just a few verses before the strong man running the race with joy. The heavens declare the glory of God. The sky above proclaims his handiwork. So we want to be like David and know the heavens. So the other day I was reading about the universe and the creation of the universe and the starlight problem, and I came across a quote in there. an idea, I should say. And this idea was, so God created the universe so that we can see the stars. But if the universe, there's galaxies out there billions of light years away, even our galaxy, from here to the heart of the galaxy, is 25,000 light years. And to the edge of the galaxy is another 25,000 light years away. So God created the universe so we can see the stars. But he could have just as well created it in such a way that we don't see the stars. Because the light hasn't had time to get here for most of the universe. So imagine that with me. You go out at night and the sun goes down and that's all there is. Blackness. All night long. Just blackness. Well, a few stars maybe in our galaxy. But he could have... Why? Why are there stars out there? Wouldn't you miss it? I mean, you go out at night, dark, starlit night, and look up there in Pegasus, and off to the side you see this little blur of Andromeda Galaxy. A trillion stars, just a little blur. I'd miss it. And so there's another verse of the why in Genesis. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of heaven to separate the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to shine upon the earth. So that's what we want to appreciate today. We want to appreciate that light. And the goal of this talk, as I said, is to appreciate that, to be aware of the heavens, and also to be able to, I'm hoping to give you all some ideas of how to encourage your students to be aware of what's happening and include observation and experience in their lives. Observation of the stars. So one more quick story. In the 80s, well, I went through school, and as I said, some of you heard me say yesterday, I didn't learn anything in school. I take that back, for those of you who heard me say that, because I got to thinking about it. I learned how to read. I learned how to write. And probably I would have learned about the stars if I had paid attention, right? I learned about anything in school if I would have paid attention. But, so I'm not blaming my teachers. It's my fault, right? But I was in high school, out of school. The world was going to end. Because the planets were going to line up, and somehow this was going to cause the world to end. I don't know if any of you all remember this, but this was in the mid-80s somewhere. So I distinctly remember thinking, I would love to go out and see the planets lined up. I want to see the planets. Not because I thought the world was going to end, I just wanted to see the planets. So I went out and stood on the hill above our house and looked up at the stars. And I was looking north because I was astronomically illiterate. I couldn't read the heavens. I didn't know the stars. So hopefully this exercise will prevent that from happening. And I'm going to switch now to a live tour of the heavens. And we're gonna take a tour. I want to kind of orient you to where we are in space, and in all of what we're doing here, we want to appreciate what's out there and just become aware of it and familiar with it. So, how many of y'all have a star app on your phone? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, nice. There's another one. Yes, I see that hand. So this is StarWalk 2. It's very handy to be familiar with what's happening. And I'll show you the universe. And we may have to have, what is it called? We don't have to have the tech guy save the day. So there's our Orion. And what you can do with a star app is you can zoom in, right? So Orion's a winter constellation. But if you look there in the sword scabbard, or whatever you call it, there's some nice nebula to look at. You can kind of see them with your binoculars. Definitely they don't look as cool, because when you have a photograph, you can have it absorbing light for hours. So when you're looking at night with a telescope binoculars, everything's kind of just black and white, because you're using your night vision. And, you know, Orion works nice as a pointer star. The pointer stars that point down to Sirius, one of the brightest stars in the sky. And they point kind of over to Aldebaran and Taurus, the bull, the constellation. And see, when you know the constellations, you kind of know your way around the sky. Let's see. I'll quit zooming in and then this will work. So you see the dashed line there? Anyone know what that is? That stands for the ecliptic. That's the path the sun follows through our sky. And so you can see the path of the sun there. And so if we look up here to the north, we have some more pointer stars. We have the Big Dipper there on the screen behind me. And the two top stars of the Dipper point over to the North Star, Polaris. You can always find the North Star. And just for the fun of it, the North Star is always there in the north, because that's the axis point of the Earth's rotation. So, we're rolling east, right? The Earth is, we're rolling east, like this. So you get a feel for that, North Star, we're rolling east, and there's the path of the sun through the sky. Taurus, does that ring a bell? You have Gemini. The sun's in Cancer right now. There's Leo. Those names mean anything to y'all? You heard them before? What are they? The zodiac. The zodiac is the ring of constellations that the sun passes through over the course of a year. So there's the zodiac. And you'll recall, God put the stars up there for times and for seasons and for days and for years. Speaking of Leo, let's go back over there. You guys are gonna get dizzy. Leo is looking out of the galaxy into deep space. Okay? So whenever Leo's high in the sky, it's a good time to look at your galaxies. And that's like the Hubble Deep Field, that's out there. Not technically in Leo, but close to it. So let's go over here and let's find the heart of our galaxy right now. is right down there. Sagittarius, the tea kettle. Sagittarius, you can see there, the right under the G in Sagittarius, you can see the handle of a tea kettle. And then the spout of the tea kettle is over to the right. The steam is the galaxy going up over our heads here, coming down through and underneath our feet, all the way around us. And so back here to Sagittarius under our feet, we're looking into the heart of the galaxy. And so we have these arms of the galaxy. So in the summertime, you look out, like tonight, Earth is going to rotate east and bring it on around. That our galaxy here is going to spin around. So that when we're looking out there, we're looking into the heart of the galaxy tonight. And you kind of get a feel for, there's less stars out there because we're looking out of that disk. And most of what everything we can see out there is our galaxy's stars. So let's look at just a couple more things here. See if I can find No, I'm not going to be able to. Well, one thing we can do, just for the fun of it, with the star app, you can search, right? So let's look for the Ring Nebula. That's always fun to look for. Did it find it? There it is. The Ring Nebula is often overhead at night. Not always. And it's an exploded star. So when you look at it with your binoculars, if you're really, really good, you might be able to resolve a little blur that looks like a ring. Probably not. Probably need a telescope. But there it is. It's beautiful when you take a photo through your telescope. And it's very near Vega. I'll show it to you later. There it is. It's in Lyra. It's right at the horizon. It won't let me show it to you. But it's a little rhombus. Is that the right term? It's a rectangle that's tilted over. And Vega's a very bright star at the corner of it. And in the far side away from Vega, between the two bright stars, is the Ring Nebula. So the constellations are great pointer stars. And it's the map that we need to use to find our way around the heavens. So if you take the time to look out into the universe and see galaxies, you'll see these giant clusters of millions and trillions of stars sometimes. Our galaxy looks very similar to this. We're about halfway out from the center, that 25,000 light years out and 25,000 light years in. And there's quite a variety. The Whirlpool Galaxy, Sombrero Galaxy, dust lanes in the Sombrero Galaxy. There's galactic battles going on, like these three here that are tearing each other apart as they collide or pass each other. The gravitational pulls ripping their... There's a lot of galactic battles happening out there. And just, when God put the stars out there, He really made this beautiful variety. And if you look out in Leo with a telescope, even a little one, if you have a really good mirror and good dark skies, you can see galaxies like stars. There's just another shot of galaxy upon galaxy. And there's clusters and groups of galaxies. And the longer you point your telescope's cameras out there absorbing light into deep space, you'll just find millions of them. Like the Hubble Deep Field. And there's groups and groups of galaxies. And the galaxies are bending light by gravitational forces and just making awesome stories for scientists to observe. And here you can kind of see there's these groups of galaxies and superclusters, and so it's a vast, amazing place out there. And we all believe how it came to be is by the word of the Lord were the heavens made. He created all this by the breath of his mouth. And so that's a problem in our world today. You know, it's billions of light years out there. And how did God do this? Well, if there's galaxies that are colliding, if there's stars exploded, and it happened billions and billions of years ago, because that's how long it took the light to get here, how do we explain that? How do we understand, did God create the light? I guess you'd call it instantaneously. If he did, then how can we see this stuff exploding and galaxies ripping each other apart? You know, does God lie? Did he make a story up for us? And so there's one way to explain it. Dr. Russ Humphreys, and he takes Genesis pretty straightforward. This is a theory. I like it, but I've got another one for you as well. And he explains it as the expanse of the heaven. He explains the heavens as a fabric. And the first thing that God did in Genesis is he created water. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the water. And I've been at, I don't know how many of Russ Humphreys' talks, right? So he always talks about this giant, like 3 light-year across ball of water. And then God stretched it out. You know, you read many times in the Bible about God stretching out the heavens. And so he talks about God stretching out this 3 light-year across ball of water, and there's water above the heavens and there's waters below where the earth is. And in that stretching out of that giant ball of water, you have the stars and the galaxies form. And here's just another, you know, visual of that and all the stretching out of the heavens. And then he's a physicist. He worked at Sandia National Laboratory, and he has this understanding of, you know, physics. And he talks about evidence that gravity changes time, slows down time, stops time. And here's some of the evidences of this, you know, the ability of gravity to stop time, bend time. And basically, I don't have a visual of this, but because of this and all his understanding of it, he says the universe is a white hole, the opposite of a black hole. A black hole, you know, all heard of. Gravity's so strong, light can't escape. You know, bends time, and at a black hole, there's an event horizon when time stands still. Because it actually stops time, just like it does light. Well, the universe, he theorizes, is a white hole, the opposite of that. And so there's still that event horizon. Everything is coming out of it instead of being sucked into it. And there's this event horizon there when on day 4, Earth passed through this event horizon, and billions of years happened out in the in the universe. And Earth is near the center of the universe. And so he explains the billions of years and the
billions and billions of light years time it took for the light to come and reach Earth. That's happening on day four as Earth passed through the event horizon. That kind of makes sense. When you can wrap your mind around time being, you know, different by different clocks. And God could have done it that way. And then just last summer I was at this talk, and this Tenev has a solution for the distant starlight problem using creation time coordinates. And he, I hope some of you can understand this, but this explains it all here, this chart. And basically, I'll just bust through this and explain it the way I understood it. He's saying that God could have created the universe with special initial conditions, which I don't understand what he's talking about here, but between day four, when the light showed up, when the stars showed up, God created the universe in such a way that it's instantaneous. And that when we look out there 50 billion light years away and see a supernova, boom, that didn't happen 50 million years ago. We see the light instantaneously. I like that. That's kind of a fascinating theory. I mean, if you can wrap your mind around this and that explains it all to you, and then I kind of like the idea that we see the universe real time, but the light of the Earth doesn't reach there because somehow it has to do with the speed of light that we can measure is only one direction. So the light coming to us is instantaneous. The light leaving is the speed of light. So there's the guy's name. It's in your handout there, Tenev. If you go to creationicc.org, you can read the whole article there. Search in their proceedings for Tenev or some of these other folks. And yeah, I would have asked him about it because I would still love to know. If we see the universe real time, how do you explain those galactic battles? How long does it take to rip apart a galaxy? I mean, if there are, I don't know, a trillion stars, and they're so far apart, it's got to take a lot of time, right? Unless God was like, hey, let's have some fireworks here. I mean, we might just be understanding it wrong, right? It looks like that. That appears to us like they're actually being ripped apart. But God, he could have just been, you know, this is fun, right? You know, boom, just check out the fireworks, right? So let's move on to the section where we appreciate all the heavens, the astronomical adventures and suggestions for observation. I kind of gave you a tour of how you can use the constellations as a pointer stars and as a road map to know where to look for all the interesting. The star clusters and nebula and galaxies, and there's things that are visible with binoculars and telescopes and just with unaided eye. And so it's a good exercise to give to your students and have them. It doesn't happen during the daytime, right? So you can say, hey, you know, tonight Sagittarius is going to be out there. Orion's going to be out. It's a winter constellation, right? The constellations are seasonal because and these 10 items here, as you see on the paper, are so you can kind of get a feel for that clockwork and the motion and the precision and the times and seasons, like God said. That's why He put them there. So the constellations change over the seasons. Like, you know, if you look out tonight, this is kind of what you'll see. And speaking of that, I'm going to plan to set my telescope up to observe Jupiter and Saturn this evening. I hope it's clear and probably will be set up down near the lounge on the grass there. So you're all welcome to swing by if you're would like to see Jupiter or Saturn through a telescope. How many of you ever done that? About half of you, maybe a little more than half. Well, great. Well, Saturn always wows, so does Jupiter, and so you might want to see it again. Or if you've never had the opportunity, I hope it works out that you can take it tonight. But yes, the constellations change over time. Like, this is every quarter, right? This is September now, about partway into your school. And this is in January. And there's Orion, you know, high and right center front. And March, things march on. And then in June, when our Scorpius is starting to show up, Leo's out there, and you're looking out at night into deep space where all the galaxies are. The moon, it has a lot of phases that are fun to observe, right? And you want to use that, those phase changes for observational reason, for this reason. If you look at the moon at full, everyone wants to see the moon when it's full, right? If you look at it with a telescope, with your binoculars, you can kind of see all the big craters. I mean, those are just whatever. But if you wait till, or if you go out when the moon is waxing or waning, you have the terminator, you have the long shadows, and they bring out the craters, and you can see the center peaks, and the sun reaches some of these higher mountains. You know, they're tall enough to reach up in and catch the last rays of the sun. As the sun waxes, you know, the terminator moves along, and so nightly you can look at different craters and enjoy the randomness of all those impacts. And it's also fun, and it's actually a very biblical thing, right, to watch for the new moon, that young tiny little fingernail moon. Sometimes you can see it and sometimes you can't, and especially when there's Ocotillo and Saguaro cactus out there, you definitely have to pull your phone up and take a picture of the young little moon there. And the moon moves east every night about a fist width, about 13 degrees. This is a iPhone shot. It's very poor, right? But to illustrate that, this is a reflection on my phone. But there's Jupiter, and there's the moon, and it had been over here very close to Jupiter. And I'll show you the series of shots here. My first iPhone moon and Jupiter shot. You can see Jupiter here and the moon to the right. And the next night, it's to the left of Jupiter just a little bit. And the next night, it was fist width farther down. And so you can predict, right, what's going to happen tomorrow night or the next night after this. It's going to be another fist width. And you know what's out there right now? This is just a week or so ago. Saturn. And, well, I moved my pictures around. Anyway, Saturn's over there, and I've got a picture up here somewhere. But knowing that motion, and you can say, all right, tomorrow night it's going to be, or a couple nights from now it's going to be over here. Tell your students, hey, watch this. The moon, you see it there? Sorry for the quality of the photo. And I think that was Venus. Coming up early in the morning, see, if you see a moon, little finger moon like this, where's the sun? So that would be Venus coming up in the morning. Oh, here's my shot of Saturn, you know, the predictive ability of a fist to know where the moon's going to be. Another thing to observe is, you know, Venus, it has phases just like the moon. So you can get your binoculars up there and you can resolve it and see the little, you know, fingernail of Venus. Speaking of Venus, you guys really did any of you see the Venus transit a few years ago? So you didn't miss it. Everyone else totally missed it. Because this isn't gonna happen for 90 years or something again. So we had cloudy skies and my boys and I tore out to the clearest skies that I could see on the radar, and that was the shore of Lake Erie. And we got to see Venus transit in front of the sun. Got to see it enter and cross the face of the sun. We had a little clouds, and those are sunspots. It was just great. So I'm trying to say, you missed it. But doesn't that give scale to our solar system when you can look through your telescope and see that? Now, Mercury, I got to see Mercury transit a few times. This is the second time. The first time I did the same thing, beat it out to Lake Erie. There's guys up there and got to see it. We actually went out on a dock to get as far away from under the clouds as we could that time. This time I set up at the Bald Eagle Boys Camp and I was going to pipe my telescope view into chuck wagon so all the groups could see, but my camera wouldn't focus, so we all took turns looking in there, and the last group clouds rolled over and they missed it. But there's Mercury on the face of the sun, crossing the face of the sun. There you can see it, tiny little dot. And don't miss it, November 11th, 2019, it starts at 7:36 a.m., so it goes right through your school on a Monday. So get your gear around, because you can do cool stuff like this. This is a NASA one, but, you know. Some of you got to be more techie than me, you know, and be able to do something like that. So don't miss it, November 11th. The date's in your handout there. Eclipses, oh, they're fun to watch. You've probably seen them, you know, the blood moon sets, or, you know, partial eclipses or a total lunar eclipse. And how many of you got to see the total solar eclipse? Totality. Look at that. If you didn't, you missed it. We went tearing down to, we were going to either go to South Carolina or Crossville, Tennessee, and we decided Crossville, Tennessee has the clearest skies. Called up my wife's cousin. They said, sure, we're having a party out in the field. Lots of people from PA came down. We set up, you know, I'm showing them a pinhole projection here, had my telescope set up. They had stuff set up. And now here's the eclipse happening. It's almost happening. See all the clouds rolling in? You know what I did? I'm like, I am out of here. I threw my stuff in the car and down the road and around the corners till I got the sun. And I got to see totality. The ring, the diamond ring. And I was not prepared for the total darkness and that diamond ring. And I will never miss it again. I mean, I might have to travel a ways, but check it out. April 8th, 2024. Look at that. Right up through Texas and Arkansas and Indiana. It's perfect. Do not miss it. pay attention to that. It's definitely something you want to see. And afterwards, when you know you have those the partial sun, the trees. I remember this from when I was young. The other eclipses, the pinhole projection. There's, you know, it does weird things to the sunlight. It's unforgettable. Take that picture too when you're watching a solar eclipse and do the pinhole projection. You know, there's the sun. It does weird things to your shadow. It's just fun. So, let me see here. We can, the sky, I just wanted to point out to you a couple of resources like the sky apps. This, I use Skywalk too. It gives me notifications. But like tonight, we're out there maybe looking at Saturn and it'll go, ba-ching, something's happening tonight. That doesn't do you all any good because you're going to be in school and you're like, go home and then ba-ching, tonight, something really cool, right? So you want something that tells you maybe a week in advance. And I actually thought about starting a Facebook group called Menno Night. It's too much work. Someone else can do that, right? So, but there is Sky Week. You know, see there, you can get a whole week ahead of time of what's happening. You got this great map. You know, you can see where things, interesting events are happening. Another one is EarthSky.org. Tonight does the same thing. Has you know, events and phenomena that you can watch. You can give your students a heads up so they don't miss it. Skymaps.com has an evening sky map by the month. They have this, you know, the list of the sky calendar here and then this nice map that you can use, and it has the constellations. That's very handy. You print it out, you've got it there. It's very useful. Even has a like a drum in the galaxy out there. The Heavens Above is the most useful website for astronomy, I think, that I've found. It has an interactive sky chart. That's the maps I was showing you, like the days. You can change the date to see what the stars are going to be like, the week, the day you're going to have your star party, etc. Another thing that you can do is watch for the satellite passes. So like here, if you click on the ISS, the International Space Station, or actually I did the brighter satellites. You look down through here and you have the brightness, the magnitude, and here's a negative 2.8. So that's a really bright one. That's about as bright as Jupiter right now. The International Space Station. So if you click on that, it pops up the map and where it's going to pass through the sky, right? So you go out there that night and you look at your watch and like, okay, watch, here it comes. And you see this bright light just coming slowly through the sky. You know? And I've used it at like a homeschool event. You're like, let's go out here, you know, everybody gathers around and like, okay, and right now, and boom, there it shows up because it was in the shadow of the Earth or something. And there goes the space station and the shuttle Atlantis. They just undocked. And these two little bright lights are passing through the sky. Oh, it's just fun. It's very useful. So you want to see the Hubble Space Telescope go over. You want to say, oh, that's the space station. You want to get the pictures of it. You can use the Heavens Above site for a lot more than just that as well. So then the rest of these are like enjoying the variety and the splendor. The heavens proclaim the creator. And so, you know, you all know light pollution. You can see some stars. You go out on a dark sky night, and that's, or, you know, once it gets dark or in a dark sky location, you can see a lot more stars. And there's Andromeda Galaxy, just that little blur in the heavens. And it's just beautiful in the telescope. It doesn't look like that, but you can't gather as much light with your eye in the telescope. To find it, the Great Square of Pegasus has these arms coming out the side, and Andromeda's about right there. and find your way around the heavens with those stars and those constellations. You can enjoy the star colors. White stars, blue stars, red stars. It's just an incredible variety, you know, the brightness of, look at the variety that God put out there for us to enjoy and marvel at his creativity. And you can count the stars. That's a biblical thing to do, right? God said to Abram, look now toward the heaven and count the stars, if you can count them. I understand that if we go out and try to count the stars, there's about 3,000 of them. Did any of you have tried it? Confirm that? I never tried it. Maybe you should divide it up into quadrants and try it sometime with your student. Supposedly you can only see about 3,000 of them, but get a little extra light gathering capacity and then they're without number. There's our Ring Nebula, and again, here's a graphic of where to find it. Vega, and it's right in here in this, between the two stars of that rhombus. Saturn always, always wins. Wows everybody with those rings. Even a binoculars will help. Just whenever Saturn's out there, you know, in good viewing, take advantage of pointing that out to for people to observe. Jupiter, you can always, with my telescope, you can see the, you know, the band. It's a little disappointing when you look because there's no color. Like I said, you're using your night vision. But, you know, you can see the red spot once in a while, the dance of it, of Jupiter's four moons, and also transits. Like, here's one of the moons crossing in front of it, or the shadow. You can see the shadows on it, and you find that kind of thing on maybe that Heavens Above page or some of your others. You can sign up for notifications for the Northern Lights. Some of you are lucky enough to be up there where you can see this kind of thing. I well remember being up north and seeing the waving curtains of color. I would hate to wake up some morning and people talk about seeing the Northern Lights down here in PA or Ohio or somewhere when the rare occasion it comes down. So, yeah, they're well worth seeing. Comets. I've got to see a few comets and take some pictures of them back in my film camera days. Sorry about the quality of this. This is just a scan of a print. But that's Comet Yakutake. And here's Comet Hale-Bopp. And there's the tech guy on my wife's hip. And Daisy and Julie pointing out Comet Hale-Bopp. And they don't remember it. It's too bad. But yeah, if a comet comes around, take advantage of observing it. Use binoculars to observe even like asteroids. We were watching an asteroid pass over and see it, you know, its movement through the background stars. Binoculars are very useful if you want a low budget way of observing the heavens. They gather more light. You can see a lot more. Star parties bring all. Pass along your love of the stars and heavens by having a star party. I've done a lot of them, and young to old all enjoy looking at through a telescope. And there's a Dobsonian Mount Reflector Telescopes. These are simple and easy. They're kind of bulky, but they're fairly inexpensive. You know, $300-$400 probably buys you one of these. Like, this is a 6-inch, and that brings in galaxies and whatever. Equatorial Mount, the same way. Well, even more of a pain to set up, but like this one here had a really good mirror. I wish I still had this scope. I shelved it, tore it apart. I still have the mirror. If one of y'all want to make a telescope, I have the mirror for that thing. You could see galaxy upon galaxy with that thing on a good dark sky night. I have one of these little portable power, you know, powered ones there. You can use a spotting scope. This little, you know, MAC. It's short for big word, you know, Cassegrain, whatever kind of scripts. They're very useful, but you sacrifice some viewing ability with having something very portable in a suitcase that can follow the stars, so you don't have to take turns. That's the problem with like one of those Dobsonian mount ones. You line it up, and then you have this line of people that look in there, and the Earth keeps turning. And so you got to keep turning your telescope, and then, hey, I got to see if, did you see it? Did you see, you know, see the problem with a Dobsonian compared to one of these. But probably near you, hopefully near your town, is the astronomy clubs. And they've got toys. And they love to show off their toys. And they really got expensive toys. So take advantage of big glass and mirrors and guys that love their toys. And, yeah, you'll get to see a lot. I used to do that at Bucknell University. I was part of the astronomy club. And we used to set up here on the porch, you know, just amazing toys. And now it looks like they've got a roof that they can roll off. So they must have them set up permanently there. And then the observatory, they have a big Clark in there. I mean, that is a really good refractor telescope. I took a group in there during the daytime because I was part of the astronomy club to go in there. We got to look at the sun through an H-alpha filter and look at those prominences there and the spicules there. I mean, definitely, if you ever get a chance to take your students to see the sun, that is an amazing experience you'll never forget. An H-alpha filter is something that I would love to have. In fact, I should probably buy one of these. I was at an event, and there was a whole bunch of people out looking through this little telescope, and I was like, what is this? Oh, they say you're looking at the sun. Look in there, and it was an H-alpha filter scope, so you can see this, the sun look more like this, but you can still see the prominences and this little bit of the spicules and everything going on in the sun. It's definitely, if you've got a budget in your school, for a $700 Coronado personal solar telescope, jump on it, because it's something you can do to enjoy the heavens when your school's in session. Comets, like you say, meteor showers, Leonids are the coolest. If you can all observe the Leonids, those, when they come shooting through the skies, the tails will kind of snake around afterwards, change colors, and they're just fun. They're just the best. Not the biggest, not the brightest, not the funnest, but the best. And you want to do that in a dark sky location, make yourself comfortable, maybe laying on hay bales with a hay wagon ride or something. And a campfire is not a very good idea. But when it's cold, you know, maybe. But that's a low light kind of thing. And my camera flash is a different story. It really hurts your night vision. It takes about half an hour to allow your night vision to take effect. Meteor hunting, meteorite craves. Take a tour. I'm sure you're not going to go to a meteor crater. Most of you won't. There's some up in Canada. And there's one here in Ohio, an impact crater. It's a fossil one. You can find shatter cones. And I don't have a picture of it here, but do the magnet thing. You know, go out to your spouting and take your magnet through it, the stuff that runs down your spouting, and look at it through your ever-present loop. And there they are, tiny, tiny little meteorites. That have fallen on your roof and been collected there. They're little spherical. That's just neat. The big ones are better. I found the big ones out at Meteor Crater. The big an observatory or a planetarium. Answers in Genesis has an awesome one. Do the rocket launches, you know, space shuttles are past now, you'll miss them. That was an Atlas V, it shook the ground. The space shuttle was, that's a Roger Roll Atlantis, the last time Atlantis took off, right? And we got to hear, you know, the tech guy here is listening to the mission control say, Roger Roll Atlantis. And yeah, pretty cool. But you can watch him live, you know. See it all happen, see the missions happen. Go to a museum, you know, Air and Space Museum's not terrible far from here. This is down in Florida, of course, but. Iridium flares, I'll skip them. They're fast disappearing. Satellite passes. Here's a poor version of the space station going over. Mars. This is something that I got to do over the years is keep track of a live mission, you know, missions that are happening. Mars really fascinates me because of the geology of it, right? And the rocks and all these cool things they've done. They've sent these machines out here that can take selfies and take pictures of Mars. And stuff happens like this avalanche and dust devils. I mean, Mars is a happening place. And there was a flood on Mars. I'm on geology, too. Like, look at this giant flood here on Mars. And if you look here at this island right here in Kasai Vallis, the zoom in cut here. Here's the same island. Check this out. Oh, let me back up. Look at the evidence of the flowing water here. And come out here to this island and zoom way in on it. Here's a crater, and this is an exhumed crater. So the story is just look at it. Impact happens. Hundreds of feet of sediment bury the crater, and later on, this giant flood comes along and washes away bunch of the sediment and leaves part of the crater sticking out of the cliff wall. That's pretty amazing to think about. And so, yeah, man can do really amazing things, and it's fun to keep track of what they're doing. And God made all this stuff. We might as well, you know, appreciate it. And there it is, galaxy upon galaxy. He spread out the heavens. So let's take note of it and see if on your list I covered everything here. I think I did. There's other live missions, you know. Whenever they send satellites out, keep track of them on NASA's site. And you the NASA pictures, you can use them. All you have to do is, you know, credit them to NASA because they're government. You guys paid for them with your taxes. I paid for them. They're my pictures. So consider the heavens. Be aware of them because God created them for times and for days and for seasons and for years. And He put them up there to declare His glory. Thank you for attending and your interest in astronomy.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.